We have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish with Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
No Maria this morning?
No, she's dealing with some family matters, but she'll be back with us next week, I'm sure.
All right. Well, let's dive into this week's significant news, starting with our own Washington State Supreme Court.
Yeah, a couple of big decisions involving Attorney General Rob McKenna this week from the Washington State Supreme Court, actually on the same day, and they're both cases that we've talked about on this show before. The first one was the lawsuit that McKenna joined a couple of years ago of 9 other Republican attorneys general of different states trying to challenge the Obama health care reform bill. And the city of Seattle had gone to court arguing that McKenna didn't have the authority to do it because he joined that suit against the wishes of the governor, against the wishes of the state legislature, against the wishes of the cabinet, and obviously, if you believe the opinion polls, of a majority of Washington State residents. And the state Supreme Court ruled that McKenna did in fact have the authority to do that. That was within his bounds of statutory authority in the, on the, position of Attorney General. But another, ruling, on a separate case, made the same day, they ruled that he did not have the authority to refuse to represent, Department of Natural Resources, head Peter Goldmark in a lawsuit that he wanted to pursue, involving Okanagan County and the public utility district there. Now, in this particular case, and this again is something we talked about at the time that it happened, I believe last summer, McKenna was refusing to represent, DNR and Goldmark in his dispute with the local, PUD in Okanagan County, basically because McKenna agreed politically with the local Okanagan County PUD, and against the Democratic, the Democrat, Peter Goldmark. And in this case, it turns out that, McKenna overstepped his authority because he is statutorily obligated to represent, department heads and state employees, whether he agrees with them or not. And in this case, he didn't agree with them. Now, the common thread in both of these cases is that it was McKenna's personal political opinions trumping his legal authority, rather his legal obligation as Attorney General to represent the entire state. The difference was that in the case of the health care reform bill, he's joining a lawsuit that which he has the authority to do. It was just something that sort of thumbed his nose at his constituents and established himself with his Tea Party bona fides and his run for governor next year. Whereas with the Goldmark case, he could not refuse to refused to represent somebody in a case of his there. Both of those cases, though, were all about McKenna defining himself, getting his name in the paper, and making his run for governor next year, which he's already started doing. If you look at any political blogs in this area, you'll see that McKenna's ads are already all over the place. And it was estimated this week in one of the political blogs that between, I think it was at PI.com, that between Jay Inslee and Rob McKenna, they're going to raise well over $20 million for the governor's race next year. And that does not even include the independent expenditures, which may even equal or exceed that all over again. Politico.com came out with a estimate this past week that the Washington State governor's race was likely to be the most competitive and per capita the most expensive in the country next year. So we're going to be hearing a lot more from both McKenna and Inslee in the months to come.
Yeah. All right. Well, sticking with our all things McKenna start, he also featured prominently in the back page, I'm not sure, scandal story.
Yeah, well, backpages.com for those of them being paying attention, first came to light when Mayor Mike McGinn took them on last month. Now, backpage.com is a site that's owned by Village Voice Media, which also owns Seattle Weekly, and it's owned jointly with Seattle Weekly and the various other Village Voice alternative weekly newspapers in different cities, based, of course, with the Village Voice in New York, and they also own papers in L.A. and most other major cities around the country, and Seattle Weekly here in Seattle. In the city of Seattle alone, it had been linked to 22 different cases of child prostitution, because unlike the Stranger, unlike a lot of other sites that do adult escort ads and such things, they don't check for age of consent for people placing ads. McGinn pulled the city's advertising with Seattle Weekly as a result, until such a time as they take more proactive ads, acts to make sure that they actually do, check age of consent for these things and don't promote child prostitution, which would seem like a fairly common sense, stance, although he took a lot of criticism for it. Well, this week, again, suggesting that he might be running for governor, McKenna joined with McGinn, and in fact, he joined also 46 other state attorneys general from different states, both Democrats and Republicans, in sending a letter to Village Voice Media asking them for proof of the efforts that they claim that they have made to avoid child prostitution. The attorney generals in their letter refer to Backpage as a hub for trafficking minors and note that juvenile prostitution has been linked to Backpage in 22 different states. So it's not just a Seattle problem. It's not just a Seattle Weekly problem. It goes all over the country. And McKenna, he's just doing his job. He does deserve some credit for as with Republicans and Democrats across the country. At least it's one thing that they can agree on, is that, trafficking, child prostitution is a bad thing.
All right. Moving on, all states, Washington State is looking at some redistricting.
Yeah, every 10 years, the congressional districts that determine who gets sent to Congress in what district. Well, it doesn't determine who. You have to vote for that. But it determines what the districts are and who votes for in which district. And unlike most other states, Washington State does that census redistricting based on in this case on the 2010 census by a nonpartisan commission. It's made up of two Democrats and two Republicans, and three of the four members of that commission have to agree to a plan, and then it goes to the state legislature for final approval. So you don't get the bizarre gerrymandering and the rigging of plans to make sure to benefit one or the other party the way you get in some states. And people may remember, for example, the controversy in Texas several years ago when the Republican state legislature there tried to redo the districts in the middle of the decade to get a couple more congressional seats safely in the hands of Republicans from the state of Texas. That was one of the things that got Tom DeLay into trouble back in the day during Bush time. But here in Washington State, it's a nonpartisan process, but Washington State will be getting a new congressional seat next year as a result of population gains made between 2000 and 2010. And the Redistricting Commission announced that it's going to be releasing its first draft of its plan on September 13th. And from then through January, they will have opportunities for public hearings and public feedback on that. Now, it's widely expected that the 10th Congressional District in Washington State will be in the Seattle area, probably on the east side somewhere, and it will be carved out of some combination of the 1st, 7th, and 8th District, although there are other places that it could come from. But that's between that and Jay Inslee leaving his seat in the 1st Congressional District in order to run for governor. So you're going to have at least two open seats in the Seattle area for Congress next year, and there's been a lot of jockeying around that. A number of Democrats have already declared their candidacy for that. Of course, there's a lot of speculation that Dennis Kucinich might be running for one of those seats, probably Jay Inslee's old seat, and so forth. How those districts are defined is going to go a long way to determining how liberal or conservative that district is and who might be elected from it. So pay attention to that when it comes out.
All right. And for those people listening, this might be their opportunity if they want to run.
Yeah, absolutely. All you need is maybe tens of millions of dollars, and you'll be all set.
All right. Let's move on to national and President Obama overruling his EPA.
Yeah, we had As you may also remember from the George W. Bush era, we had a fine tradition on this program called the Friday Afternoon News Dump, in which news that the administration really didn't want anybody to dwell on for very long got saved until Friday afternoon, which is the slowest time of the news week in terms of news cycles, because viewership for TV and readership of newspapers and websites is the lowest on Saturday of any day of the week, which is probably why they have our show on Saturday too.
No.
In any event, we had an Obama administration Friday afternoon news dump yesterday. It was that the Obama administration overruled its own EPI and ended a plan to EPA rather and ended a plan to reduce emissions of ground level ozone. That's the pollutant that creates smog. In the Bush era, it was 75 parts per million, and the EPA, after several years of studying, had concluded that the scientific basis, scientific evidence would lead one to propose instead a safer level of 60 parts per million, a reduction of 20%. After heavy lobbying by industry and quite a bit of squawking by congressional Republicans, the Obama administration overruled its own EPA and asked EPA Director Lisa Jackson to withdraw the plan. So in just the past 3 months now, we've had three major environmental decisions by the Obama administration. We have had them tentatively approving drilling in the Arctic, giving green light to the our preliminary green light to the 1,700-mile tar sands pipeline, and opening 20 million more acres of the Gulf of Mexico to drilling. Now we've got a fourth one, the rolling back of the scientifically proposed guidelines for ground-level ozone pollutants. And you can blame environmentalists for being pretty angry over not just this one decision, but this whole series of decisions that are being made somewhat surprisingly, even as Obama is gearing up for election. And this tells us a couple of things. Number one, it tells us that he is far more concerned about wooing the votes of independents next year and not doing too much to anger big industry, who he may be calculating doesn't want to have to deal with a nominee Bachman or somebody else from the far right Tea Party wing of the Republican Party, which it seems like most of the Republican presidential candidates are trying to position themselves as right now. It tells you that he's considering that as more important than his own base or the environmental vote. And the other thing that we learned is that environmentalists are really, really angry. We're now up to more than 1,000 arrests at the White House over the tar sands pipeline protests that have been going on now for a couple of weeks and that have been almost completely blacked out by major media news. I think Counterspin was talking about that a few minutes ago. Those arrests are continuing, and my partner was saying to me just this morning, gee, you know, if he really wanted to walk the talk, wouldn't it be nice if Al Gore got arrested as well? So maybe somebody should like drop him an email or something, or we could start a movement to get Al Gore arrested.
Leave a little map on his doorstep.
Yeah, exactly. He might not remember where
the
it
White
is.
House is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Even though by all rights, he probably should have been living there for a few years.
Let's move on and talk about the Federal Housing Finance Agency.
Yes, the Federal Housing Finance Agency is the agency that is overseeing what's left of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. And this is something that we've heard Maria talk about on this program. Well, the FHFA announced yesterday that it was filing suit against Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, and 14 other major banks over claims that those banks knowingly misrepresented bad AAA mortgage securities. The FHFA trying to recoup up to $30 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars in losses due to those bad mortgage securities, and they're doing so just as the statute of limitations is expiring. Now, it seems likely in this case that the FHFA is so understaffed and underfunded that they needed as much time as possible to try and build the case before they could file suit here. But this is really a very major story. The interesting part of the media coverage of the story, however, and you saw this in the New York Times, you certainly saw it in the financial press. Remember, much of this press is based on the East Coast and based in New York, where Wall Street is. They seem to be a lot more concerned about the cost of potential recapitalization of banks if they had to give up some of this money, because they are, you know, almost certainly guilty as charged. The only question is going to be one of political and economic expediency, whether they can afford this kind of money, and given their record profits, they probably can, even though they're going to squawk about it. One would hope that they just didn't turn around and get that money back from taxpayers. Because at the end of the day, the question is, who pays for all those enormous losses from what, as we've discussed on this program many times, really amounts to countless systemized, institutionalized cases of criminal fraud. And criminal fraud that has really ruined the lives of a lot of people who've lost their homes, in some cases lost more than that. It'll be very interesting to see how this case moving forward. Of course, you know, the banks are going to throw an army of lawyers at this. There's going to be a lot of political pressure on the Obama administration around it as well. It'll be very interesting to see how it plays out.
So have you got your hopes up for that one?
It's an election year. I think it will be settled.
I suspect as well.
but it will be good to see, not because, if nothing else, the discovery process ought to be outstanding. And given that you haven't seen any criminal prosecutions, which you really should have seen, at least so far around a lot of these cases, this may be our best chance of seeing any, not just getting justice, but even finding out any kind of information on a clearer narrative of what exactly happened and who is responsible, for the defrauding of literally tens of millions of Americans.
All right. Let's move on. And article this week coming out of the prestigious medical journal, The Lancet.
Yes, we saw the first time a conclusive link between New York Fire Department firefighters who were on the scene of the World Trade Center attacks on 9/11 and over the subsequent recoveries of the few weeks after that, that they were 19% more likely to get cancer than other firefighters from New York who were not on the scene there, or who were not exposed to the particulate matter. Now, this is just, of course, in the first decade, and we've got the 10th anniversary of 9/11 coming up in another week or so. We're going to be hearing a lot about 9/11. A lot of the kinds of particulate matter that were in the air as a result of those fires and explosions, asbestos, jet fuel, and so on, those cancers can take decades to manifest. So it's really pretty early on for a lot of these types of cancer. Now, the commission that Congress established in order to help pay for the health care costs of people affected by 9/11 does not count cancer as one of the illnesses for which it reimburses healthcare costs. And there have been some people, some firefighters who've already died as a result of cancer that their families believe was caused by their exposures at 9/11. So here's hoping they do the right thing as a result of this study, and some other studies that are in the works, and reimburse some of those costs at the very least, because government has been in denial for many, many years, and of course, particularly during the Bush administration, that there was any adverse impact due to the particulate matter that was in the air from the explosion and fires at the World Trade Center. The science is now telling us otherwise.
Wow. So it sounds similar in terms of what downwinders experience, where the government, of the little that they do pool into for people's health care, they limit it in scope and list, you know, just a fraction of the things that they'll be paying out on.
Exactly. And then, as we saw with the flap over the payment of health care costs in Congress last December, a lot of the people who are most vociferously waving the flag and using 9/11 to advance their political agenda, conservatives in particular, are the same people who were squawking about the healthcare costs and refusing to help the people who were affected by the attack.
All right. Let's move on then to international, starting with Libya.
Yeah, a lot going on in the aftermath of the overthrow of the Gaddafi regime this week. One of the more interesting things, not just rebels also, but international human rights investigators and other researchers are starting to go through the troves of documents that have been found in the secret of Gaddafi administration. And one of the things that has come up in the past couple of days is that the Gaddafi intelligence forces ties with the CIA and MI6 were far more extensive than had ever previously been known. That included at least 8 U.S. suspects during the Bush administration who had undergone extraordinary rendition to Libya for interrogation and almost certainly for torture as well. Now, this, people may remember, we seem to be talking a lot about the Bush administration today, but that's just sort of how this week shook out. One of the few triumphs of the Bush administration in terms of its foreign policy, and I say that with an absolute straight face, because, you know, not everything's black and white, even the worst administrations can do some good things. In 2004, the Bush administration, in a rare burst of diplomacy, helped to convince the Gaddafi regime in the state of Libya to give up its nuclear weapons program. Okay, this is a good thing, and you know, it's really very hard to criticize that. Well, it turns out what was happening behind the scenes was that whole deal was based on the enemy of my enemy being my friend. A lot of the same radical Islamists that opposed military dictators throughout the Middle East were fighting against the Gaddafi regime. And, of course, the Bush administration wanted to get the same people. And so they made a deal with the dictator, and they started sharing intelligence resources, and they started not only sharing intelligence on Islamists who were thought to be affiliated with Al-Qaeda, but also Islamists who were fighting against Muammar Gaddafi. So once again, the Bush administration, which gave a lot of lip service, especially in the days running up to the Iraq war, of wanting to see democracy flower throughout the Middle East, and a lot of very credulous pundits were talking about how Bush was just too much of an idealist because he believed that democracy could triumph everywhere, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it turns out the Bush administration really couldn't find a dictator anywhere in the Middle East that it didn't want to cozy up to, and that list even included Muammar Gaddafi, who was responsible for a number of terrorist acts, certainly responsible for pretty serious human rights violations and torture and repression within his own country. And now it turns out he was a Bush administration favorite as well, and the CIA was cooperating pretty closely with him in the years 2003 through about 2008.
But as far as we can tell so far, there doesn't appear to be a real change of policy once Obama came into power.
That's not particularly clear. I mean, there doesn't appear to be as much extraordinary rendition going on. Those cases appear limited to the Bush administration, but certainly the cooperation continued throughout the Obama administration as well. Yes.
All right. Anything else on Libya? Or?
Well, just to note that we're starting to see, we talked last week about the potential for infighting and ongoing. You have to give Obama credit for not going to an aircraft carrier and hanging a mission accomplished banner on the deck, but we're starting to see some infighting and some tensions amongst the committee that's running Libya in the aftermath of the overthrow. Of course, you had essentially three separate groups of fighters converging from the west, south, and east that overtook Tripoli. They really never did coordinate very well because they're all from different tribes and have different interests, and we're starting to see some of the fault lines in those groups now in terms of some of the different political and ideological and tribal interests that they have. So these are very, very tricky and difficult times going on in Libya right now, and it will particularly given how much oil money is at stake, the potential for intervention by international governments and corporations on the side of one or another of those actors. It's something that we need to be watching very, very carefully in the sort of power vacuum that's going on right now.
All right, moving on to Syria.
Yeah, speaking of fractured countries, Wednesday, the Attorney General of Hama Province, province in central Syria, where a number of pretty bloody protests have taken place, quit, denounced the Assad government, and gave really one of the first truly detailed looks at just how many protesters have been killed and tortured and imprisoned and otherwise repressed during the several months of protests that have been going on in Syria right now. Those protests continue to pace with no sign of backing down yesterday. Friday, of course, being the weekly day of prayer in the Islamic world, and during the Arab Spring has become the day of choice for mounting a lot of the protests. A lot of Syrian government militias surrounding mosques in different cities yesterday so that people could not leave the mosques after services and go join protests. But those protests taking place nonetheless, and more deaths taking place as well. But we got our first look this week at just how extensive the bloodshed has been, with international media basically shut out of Syria, so it's been very, very hard to tell. Also this week, the European Union slapped a ban on oil imports from Syria, so the international economic pressure on Syria is increasing as well, and it seems like it's likely to be a matter of time before we have another Arab government falling as well.
All right. And then finally, update on the Gaza flotillas.
Yeah, a couple of updates, actually. There was a UN report, and investigation of the flotilla massacre in summer of 2010, or was it two years ago? Gosh, they're all running together now. I should know this. But in any event, it was the one in which Israel attacked the flotilla in international waters and killed 10 people, including one American citizen.
On the Mavi Marmara, right?
Yes, exactly. And the UN found that the Israeli attack on the flotilla was excessive and unreasonable in its use of force. Israel rejecting the findings, of course. And perhaps more importantly, in terms of the Middle East, Turkey expelling its Israeli ambassador over Israel's refusal to apologize for the attack on the flotilla and the killing of 9 Turkish citizens, and downgraded its ties over both the Gaza blockade and the flotilla massacre. And Israel's failure to apologize for it. This further isolates Israel in the Middle East, because Turkey had been one of the few Islamic countries with it, which Israel has historically had pretty good relationships and done joint military exercises and so forth. Instead, between that and Hosni Mubarak now being out of power in Egypt, and the cross-border incident involving killing of Egyptian soldiers last week, Israel is finding itself more and more isolated in the Middle East and not adapting at all well to the Arab Spring and the idea that it is no longer the only democracy in the Middle East.
All right. Events.
One big one this week, Bumbershoot. Go and check it out. It's supposed to be wonderful weather this week, weekend, and we may not get much more of that. So so go and enjoy it while you can. Have a great Liberty weekend.
All right. Talking as we do every week with Job Parrish, co-editor at Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State's on the web at www.eatthestate.org. News, comments, tips, international, local comics, all the good stuff. Check it out.